All right, guys, what's up? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. These are the first of the podcasts that I'm now no longer doing in the studio. I'm talking principally now about Bitcoin to Bitcoiners, because that is the thing that is most intellectually, spiritually interesting to me in my life. And today I am joined by somebody that I saw speak at Cheat Code, which is a Bitcoin conference in Sydney. And that is Mr. Michael Dunworth. How are you, Michael? Welcome to the show.
Mate, thanks very much for having me, Adam. Appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Mate, we had your brother on the show and Peter. He was a massive hit. This is going to be a change of gears for people who like Peter's sort of more of a serious character, but and you're more of a entrepreneurial, I don't know how I'd describe you. But
Idiot. He's the smart one and I'm the idiot.
There you go, an entrepreneurial idiot. But I'm going to tell you, of all the speakers, I enjoyed your speech the most. I laughed out loud multiple times. And you've got quite the story. I mean, everybody says Bitcoin's volatile and it goes up and down. I was doing a bit of research on you leading into this. And you've got this epic tale of before the age of 40, having a business that you started sold for $1.5 billion. Your personal stake was $260 million. And you were like 36 years old, and then the crypto markets changed and it all went sideways yet. And it was a crypto business, and you're still here smiling about cryptocurrency despite having papered a deal and then it falling apart. Tell us about like what led you into the world of crypto and then ultimately into Bitcoin. I'd love to hear that story of like how you got into this space.
Yeah. And it's fully accidental, like totally accidental. We've all tripped over and fallen into it. So my journey started in 2013, where I tried to move to America in like, you know, you see the entrepreneur dream. You move, like actors go to Hollywood, nerds go to San Francisco. That was kind of the mantra, right? If you want to make it big, yes, you can act in Australia. Yes, you can build a company in Australia. But why try and target 30 million people when you can fly 14 hours and try to target 300 million people? And so I moved over there and moved into a hacker house, which is like an orphanage with Wi-Fi, basically bunk beds everywhere. It's just people trying to do cool stuff. And so I met my co-founder there and we were building basically an express checkout where you could just one-click checkout from everywhere online. Now we've got Apple Pay and stuff and Amazon, so that's less of a product. But in that process, we added Bitcoin as a spending option. So let's say you wanted to go to Zara.com, Amazon.com, and then, I don't know, Woolworths.com. And you would go and tell us all the things. It was a browser extension. So you click on all the products that you want to buy and it sweeps it into one shopping cart. So Zara, Amazon and Woolies or whatever. And then you check out in one spot. We buy it for you. You give us your card and we'll go and buy it for you. But part of that was, well, we go, well, why don't we add Bitcoin? This is 2013. Bitcoin was about $200 each and it had just popped 300% from $70 to $200. So we thought if we're charging a convenience fee for buying all this stuff off multiple websites, we're charging 2%. Everyone's just made 300% on their Bitcoins because it's gone up 3X. So we thought, okay, we could charge 2% on that. And that was the soiree into Bitcoin. We added it as a novelty. And then from there, it picked up so much traction that we ended up growing, building on that and saying, well, right, let's focus on Bitcoin. What is it? What's good about it? What's bad about it? And we were coming from the tech side, more like we're trying to build something cool. But Bitcoin was this own animal. Like it's on its own trajectory and it's really incredible. And as we started learning about the power of it, we were like, you know, this is it. Like, you know, 2013, 2014, we were like, this is the next chasm. You know, you had desktop, then you had web, then you had mobile. Whatever that sequence is, this is the next one because nothing's going to be bigger than it. Now, after that, we sort of made the investment where we said, all right, cool, let's try and focus our company and build it out as an infrastructure provider to other Bitcoin platforms. So if you wanted to build an exchange, you've got to get all these licenses, all these banking partners, all these ID verification solutions. And that was really hard. So we thought, well, why don't, if we've had to do it, so we basically built it all out ourselves and then we white labeled it so that other developers could go to market faster. Because if everyone had to do what we did, it'd take 5 years to get going and $10 million. That's not really practical, especially when you've got a live one in your hands like Bitcoin, where you're like, oh my God, this is so exciting. You want to get this into everyone's hands as fast as possible. And so, and that was where the start of the journey. So I moved over there, met my co-founder, and I was the CEO of Wire, W-Y-R-E. And we are an infrastructure provider to all the other exchanges, liquidity provider to exchanges, security services, all that sort of stuff. And it was a fantastic journey. Like, you know, like you mentioned, you know, we had this transaction for $1.5 billion. And I would have stood to make about $250 million, I think it was, which would be mad. But yeah, these things happen. They fall through. And as an entrepreneur, it's your responsibility to manage your own expectations. So I think there's one of the things that people talk a lot about is learning how to manage your expectations. And as an entrepreneur, you get smacked in the face with it all the time. And it starts when you raise money and you think, oh yeah, they've signed on to invest. And then they pull out and you're like, ah. And that's where the saying, it's not money in the bank until it's money in the bank, you know? And that teaches you this level of expectation where you're like, well, something can always go wrong in these things. And you're dealing with money and large checks and millions of dollars and stuff. So, you know, people have their bad days and they pull out. But learning how to manage expectations, learning how to manage expectations is probably one of the best skills you'll get from an entrepreneur journey that you can, extend into your own life. Because if you always, you know, plan for the worst, hope for the best, which means that some people hear that and they go, oh, that's so negative. No, that's reality. The worst thing is possible to happen. Then I want to know what I'm going to do when the worst thing happens. And you've got to have redundancies. You've got to have a plan B because the show must go on, especially if you're an infrastructure company, like let's say you're Energy Australia, your energy can't go down. You've got to have redundancies. You've got to have backups. You've got to have fail plans. You've got to have recovery plans, disaster plans. And that's all like what infrastructure is. And so as an infrastructure provider to the Bitcoin economy and the crypto community, that was something, you know, you learn about redundancies. Everything has got a backup. Everything's backup has got a backup of a backup. Because, you know, like let's say you're processing $10 million a day or whatever it is. If you go down for 10 minutes, that's close to 10 grand or 20 grand or 30 grand for someone's platform. And that's obviously revenue. So you don't really have the luxury of actually having downtime, which is, you know, obviously good as a service, but it's terrible to work behind because you're expected to be online like 24/7 if something goes wrong. But, you know, I was very fortunate, you know, like obviously it sounds like a bad outcome, but when you think about it, I got to be at the birth. It's like getting to watch the birth of like something famous. Like yeah. I got to be, in the weeds of Bitcoin in 2013 and 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Like, and if you get 12 years experience in a 14-year-old industry, like, whew, I mean, pay me whatever you want. Don't pay me. Doesn't matter. I've got 14 years of experience. It's probably worth a lot more than whatever I could have gotten paid. And it's very rare to have that much
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't all that long ago when that sort of fell apart for you, only 2 years ago. So it's you've bounced back from it. I looked it up in the Fin Review and it said $267 million. But as you said, it's all about the way you frame it. What I'm interested in is like one of the things that I love the most about being a Bitcoiner is the community. Like when I met you guys in Sydney and you've got these incredibly bright people, really smart people that have kind of like got a little bit of pirate in them, that you know, a bit of rebel in them, but there's zero ego, right? Like we were playing beach cricket down there at Bronte, and you've got people there that have been around the Bitcoin space from 2012, no doubt got pretty decent bags of Bitcoin, but there's no ego. What was your journey into really your aha moment, setting aside the tech business, but your aha moment about what made you, we call it being orange pilled, obviously, in Bitcoin. What was your orange pilling process? Was there somebody that sort of guided you? Was it books? Like what was the awakening that happened in you that made you really deeply get what Bitcoin is, aside from just number go up?
No, that's a really good question. And everyone's got their own sort of aha moment, you know, when everything clicks. And most people get it much faster than me. Like I was working in the space for like 5 or 6 years before I really kind of grokked what it was. It's so funny. At the time, altcoins weren't really a thing. There was 5 or 6 altcoins. Now there's millions, obviously. But that's like at the time, there was no crypto. It was Bitcoin and like 4 or 6 other things. But what makes you orange pilled? I think for me, one of the biggest things, I don't know if you've heard of this before, but in Bitcoin's history, there's an era in 2017 called the block size wars. And the block size wars was a really kind of like quite literally a fork in the road for Bitcoin, where it could fly or die. And the idea was that basically some people wanted to raise the block size, other people said don't. And I, in my head, I was like, oh, why would it matter? Like, you know, everyone's going to be building on this. You want as many people coming to the party and, you know, high throughput, lots of transactions. Yeah, raise the block. And my team, or the team that I was on at Y, obviously working there as well, my team, we had a lot of maxis on there, like Bitcoin maximalists. And they're explaining to me the principle about the block size and what changing it means and what not changing it means and stuff like that. And what I realized was that even though we had 1 million users and Coinbase had 50 million users, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But basically you've got this tremendous amount of users, but they don't have any weight on the network. So because they're not running a node, and when I realized that, I said, oh my God, Coinbase can have 100 million users, because Coinbase was voting to raise the block size at the time. And I was like, oh, shit, so it's going to go through. And then I was like, no, it's not going to go through, because then all these individuals aren't running nodes, and nodes are the what gets to vote on the network. And as I realized that, I was like, this isn't a startup tool. Like, this isn't like, oh, cool. This is like, oh, you know, a cool new tool to play with. It's like, this is this very hard thing from a philosophical standpoint to break. So to change its parameters is very challenging. So that's interesting. I've never seen humans be able to build something that we can't break. And that's interesting. Now, from a technical standpoint, it's decentralized. And when I say that, I don't mean that buzzwordy. I mean that as in, like, you know, imagine you had a nuclear warhead that's incredibly dangerous, but you chop it up into 1 million pieces and everyone's got a piece. That's almost like what Bitcoin is. We don't have any tech on the planet. I don't care if you're NATO. I don't care if you're NASA. I don't care if you're an alien species. We don't have tech to stop it. So in my head, I'm like, okay, this thing's unstoppable. It's unbreakable. We don't know who made it. And it's basically like, it's like this indestructible piece of machinery. So for me, I was like, oh, I get it now. It doesn't change. This isn't a thing that we can all tinker with our fingers. This is a, it's doing that. And if you're on it, great. If you're not, don't worry about it. And then I think, so that made me realize, holy shit, this thing's going nowhere. And if it can't break, and then it's got a predictable supply curve, that means to me that that's just a sure bet. You can't not bet on it. And I'm happy to laugh in my own face if I'm wrong for my conviction. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, where would I put my money? If everything else is getting debased so quickly, how can anyone be expected to store wealth in something that's melting? And I think the idea of understanding, when I understood, I think it was Jamison Lopp. He's like a really smart dude in Bitcoin and security. He works at a company called Casa. But he wrote something like, your fiat money is melting. It's like an ice block melting. And I was like, oh my God, that's literally exactly what it is. It's going down by 12% every year. I'm not a sucker. I'm not that stupid. So, okay, cool. I'm going to move my wealth onto a Bitcoin standard. And so you move your money into a Bitcoin standard. But what happens is people say, oh, well, I couldn't do that. It's too volatile. Oh, I can't do that. I can't deal with the risk. No worries. But it's not risky. Your time frame is risky. Like, if I'm trying to time the market, if I'm trying to cross a highway and time it real, if I've only got that much to look at, I'm probably going to get hit by a car when I try and run across because I haven't seen my surroundings. But if I expand my timeline and go like that, my field of view becomes much bigger. And like, if you look at anyone that's bought Bitcoin, not sort of, not maybe, not kinda, every human being on the planet that has bought and held Bitcoin for 5 years or more is in the green. Yeah. I mean, in a world of so much confusion, that feels like a pretty strong signal to follow, you know?
Yeah, so we call it lowering your time preference, right, in the Bitcoin yeah. world, which is just not being so fussed about it happening now, taking a longer time preference. Michael Saylor says it all the time. Anybody who has held for four years or more, I think it is yeah. or five it might be, is in the green, is ahead. I you said a lot there, and I'm just thinking about the average person who still just thinks Bitcoin is like a stock where you just buy it and then hope it goes up. Like, how might
it's they a little different to that. It's a little, let's go down a layer deeper. So Bitcoin's like a stock. Yes, it feels like that. It's a tech thing that goes up and down. Absolutely. It does feel like that. But as we sort of get more meat on the bone and we dig a little deeper, your perspective of it will be something more akin to like being able to buy into the wheel. Like, hey, man, I invented this thing. What's it called? The wheel. Oh, cool. Can I buy a share of that? Yes. And you'll get increased value. Your wealth will grow for every person that uses the wheel in the future. You get royalties. That's what Bitcoin's like. Or it's like the start of the internet. Hey, man, there's this thing called the internet coming out. You want to buy a stock in it? Imagine you could buy shares in the internet and receive upside from anything that went well on the internet.
It's a limited number of shares forever. Exactly. Unlike a company where companies can issue more shares, the number of shares available are limited. And if it is the right thing and it has a use case that people want to use. So how might a person experience fiat money melting, right? Like, so when give me an example of why you don't want to hold fiat.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, I don't know if you ever had, you know, my parents, when I used to go to the movies, right? You go to the movies, they'd be like, my parents used to give me $3 and I'd go there, buy popcorn, buy a movie ticket, catch the bus home and give my parents change. Now it doesn't cost $3. You know how your homes used to cost 20 grand when our parents bought them and, you know, groceries were $8 a week. Now they're not. The only difference between that and now is inflation. Quite literally inflation. So the reason why everything keeps going up is because it's becoming basically you need more money to do the same thing. So if you're manufacturing and your costs are constantly going up, you put your prices up. Now, in a capitalist environment, if I'm trying to make more money for the same amount of effort, what I might do is things like change ingredients. So for instance, McDonald's, they change their ingredients from natural ingredients to cooking, you know, with seed oils and stuff that's caused, you know, tremendous amount of damage. But all these things happen because of inflation. Costs get tighter. You know, Cadbury, they want to keep the Snickers bar the same size. Oh, shit, it's getting more expensive to make it. Okay, well, let's make Snickers bars not 80 grams. Let's make them 76 grams. And they look the same. No one will notice it's different. Great example, Big Macs. Back in the day, have Big Macs gotten smaller? Yes, they have. You haven't gotten bigger. They have. They've gotten much smaller because it's much more expensive to create a Big Mac. So if you ever want to understand inflation, just think about why things go up in price. And it's not because business owners are getting greedier. Like, it's not like the guy that was selling avocado toast 10 years ago for $8, who's now selling it for $20. He's not just trying to make more money out of you. He's trying to keep up with everything. And so as the thing is, inflation or money is at the root of everything we do. So the core root, hey, man, do you want to come skiing with me tomorrow? Yes or no? Whatever the answer is, it's going to be related to money. Hey, man, do you want to come to my birthday? Yes or no? Related to money. Oh, sorry, Matt, I don't have enough time. Sorry, da-da-da. Whatever it is, it comes back to money. So when you fuck with the part of my language, when you screw with the money at the root, everyone else is paying. You can't escape it. It's the closest equivalent I could think of is being in a sauna. And you're in a sauna and it starts getting hot, but the door's locked. Someone else is turning it up from the outside. That's what inflation is. You're locked into a circular economy where someone is melting the money faster than you can escape. And so when you think about that, I like working hard. And I'm sure anyone listening to this, I'm sure you're busting your ass 40 hours a week. But man, I'm not smart, but I would get the shits real fucking bad if I worked 40 hours a week and I only got paid for 30 hours of the work. And that's with exactly, not sort of, not maybe, that's exactly what's happening every time you go to work and you don't store your wealth in Bitcoin. Someone else can melt it. And the biggest reason why inflation, why the cost of stuff goes up, is because you can print money, right? And by printing money, when they print money, they don't just sit there and go, yeah, control P. They go, oh, fuck. Okay, well, how much do we need? Okay, we need a couple of hundred million for something. All right, well, let's say we're building a 1,000 new homes out in Western Sydney. And, you know, 4 years later, no one's built a home, but three politicians have yachts. Like, it doesn't make sense. And it's like, okay, cool, whatever. But either everyone's incompetent, everyone's lazy, or everyone's just greedy. And I think it's probably a combo of all of it. But the reality is that if you hold Bitcoin, like,
I sleep like a baby. I sleep like shit, to be honest, but I sleep mentally. I sleep like a baby in terms of my financial self because I know nobody can melt it. So if you were paying $2 for a movie ticket in 1970, if you're on a Bitcoin standard, when you go to the movies now, you're still going to be paying the same $2 because your money hasn't been inflated away. The easiest way to think about it is like fruit on a tree. I get free money if I hold Bitcoin. My wealth goes up. Now, if I buy a strawberry, right? Buy a strawberry. Thank you. Now, I can eat the strawberry, plant the seeds, water it, and wait a year, and I've got another 12 strawberries or whatever. Bitcoin is the same. Plant it, don't touch it. It's going to grow. And now, yes, you're not going to see money growing in a tree, but your wealth pile will grow like a money tree. It is the closest thing I can think of technically to a money tree in that analogy. And that's not saying that it's easy or free. It's more just saying that it rewards patience. It's a long game. Sorry.
We had a chat in the pre-chat about this, and you were saying how, you know, how much it impacts your life when you really truly understand this and how much more peaceful you are because you understand the trajectory. And I just want to play back for the listeners some of what you just said, because one of the biggest things that listeners don't understand is what is Bitcoin useful for? And it's so obvious that it's sitting in such plain sight that people completely miss it. It's really ironic. And so what Michael's just sort of said is that you've got to make your time preference wider or longer. Like if you stop thinking about what the price of Bitcoin is today, tomorrow, or a month ago, or even a year ago, and you start to go, okay, I'm going to expand my view to 5 years. Michael said, you know, he's talking about going on to what a Bitcoin standard as your life. What that means is if you look through the lens of anything that's available for sale today, and what it will cost in Bitcoin in 5 years from now, or 5 years in the past, you'll see that everything has gotten cheaper over the last 5 years if it's priced in Bitcoin, of what Bitcoin was worth 5 years ago and what it can buy today. Everything's gotten cheaper for Bitcoiners over the last 5 years. So Bitcoiners just think about money in a five-year window instead of a five-minute window. Most people are so desperate, in such desperate situation for money and so addicted to the now that they can't expand the time for it. But everything gets cheaper when you look through that lens. And so when people say, what's the use case of Bitcoin? Well, when you go to work and you store your money in Bitcoin, you know that in 5 years, everything's going to be cheaper, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to your wealth is going to be deflated away. That alone is a massive use case. In fact, possibly the biggest use case of anything in the history of the world, because money touches everything of our lives. Is that sort of a way to put it?
100%. And a great analogy, just conceptually, if you think about buying a home with Bitcoin, let's say we're buying a home in 2016, it was 664 Bitcoins. In 2020, it would cost you 45 Bitcoins. And in 2024, it'd cost you 6.6 Bitcoins.
Wow.
So if you think about that trajectory, like you measure it in iPhones, measure it in homes, whatever you want, the reason why the prices go down is the opposite to the reason why the prices go up. If you're pricing it in a currency that's inflationary, the prices go up. You know, you hear about the jokes about Zimbabwe dollar having a $1 trillion note or something. That's what the end game of inflation looks like, where you run out of zeros in the Rolodex, basically, but the money becomes like paper. It's like it's worth less than paper. Now, I don't want to be on that team. One, I'm not in control. And two, I don't rate their abilities. Now, so I'm not insulting them. I just don't think they're talented at their job. And that's not being rude. Like if I went to a circus and it wasn't entertaining, I'd say the same thing about them. And it kind of feels like we're in a circus when it comes to inflation. So what do you do if you don't like that? Oh, inflation, not for me. Thank you. Some people like broccoli. Some people like inflation. I don't like broccoli and I don't like inflation. So it's like, okay, well, what currency is doing the opposite to that? If everything's going up in some currency, it'd be a miracle to find something that everything goes down against, and Bitcoin's the only thing. Guys, like as a secret, like don't tell anyone this, but it is the easiest thing on earth to buy, hold, and focus on yourself. That's what life should be. Life isn't about ignoring sunlight and sitting in a concrete box and trying to work for some dude that's got a tie and he's yelling at you until your spreadsheet gets delivered on the 14th or the 5th for the quarterly report or whatever the fuck. That's not it. That's not the end game. That's not the goal. That's not the design of this system. You are meant to find your purpose and be happy. But the fastest path to do that is most likely Bitcoin. Because if you think about in money systems, let's think about the internet. Before we had cable and, you know, high-speed internet, gigabit download, all that stuff, we used to have 6 kilobyte per second download speeds. And that was on modems and that was on dial-up internet. The old monetary system is essentially like dial-up internet. It's good, like it's good, it works, it serves a purpose, but you know, your blind Freddy could see that you should be using Starlink and not a 36.6 modem from 1992. And that's kind of the same thing. Now, if you're a young person, I speak to my 15 or 20-year-old self, I'm going to say, dude, pile into Bitcoin because you have so much time to be wrong. You can ride out the volatility. Now, if you're 48, you've got 3 kids and 6 mortgages and 18 fucking school fees to pay, I'd probably say that there's going to be more of a time issue because your demands in life that you've created around yourself are going to need the pace of a faster ROI. But if you get to craft your course now as a young person or a young man or woman, we couldn't do what our parents could do, or maybe some of the audience, their grandparents. We couldn't, you know, our parents sort of said, you work hard, get a uni degree, you find your partner and you get a home. That works when back in their day, it was 4 times the annual income in order to buy a home. So if you're a husband and wife, a young couple, you can go, okay, let's save for 2 years and we're going to buy a home. Awesome. We can't do that now. It costs 18 times the annual average salary to purchase a home. So that narrative is out the window. So to young people now, your narrative should be focus on the most predictable things out there. And Bitcoin is the most predictable thing. While you think it's volatile in the short term, its trend is just one direction. It's a literally like Harry Styles, one direction up and to the right. That's all it's doing.
Be careful with a hand gesture. You'll Elon yourself.
Oh,
mate.
God. I'm not talking about Hitler. God, I'm talking about the up and to the right. But yes, I will be careful about that for future. I'll get him on the Elon Musk train. But no.
Peter, your brother said that. Your brother said it's volatile to the upside. And I think this is the thing that trips up so many people is that it's because their time preferences and their focus on these things is so short. And that's how they're conditioned. With real estate, you don't have that daily price thing, right? But with stocks and Bitcoin, people do their own head in, you know, like, and that's why people make money in real estate because they don't see the price every day and they just wait, you know, because they don't get tripped out of it.
Yes. And you know what? That's such a good point, Adam, because so many, like one of the largest amount of people that come to the industry in Bitcoin and stuff are property guys or former property guys or want choosing between property and Bitcoin because Bitcoin is the same as property, scarce, same, the same essence of an investment. One with that though, you know, people that buy Bitcoin, they check the price every day because you can, and it's super liquid. So you could, if you buy, you know, $10 million worth of Bitcoin, you can sell it after it goes up 5%. Now, imagine you had a home and it had the same sort of thing where you could basically look at it every day and be like, oh my God, I'm up 3%. Fuck it, let's sell. Now, you don't do that because the mentality with a home or an investment property is much more long-term horizon. Bitcoin needs the same lens. So it's hyper liquid, like something day to day, but you get the most value out of it the longer you hold it. And I think it's, if nothing else, it's a really good teacher. Like it's a really, really good teacher for people to show you discipline because as a money, it can't, it's not broken. It's not changing. Even though our whole world is changing every single day so much, this thing is like the line in the sand that can never change. And so like, what I was talking about at Cheat Code when we met was predictability and risk are like the inverse of neighbors. If I have something that's very predictable, I have a very low risk. If I increase the risk, I decrease the predictability. Now, if Bitcoin, if I'm 20 years old and I'm trying to save for 10 years, I want to save in something that I know will be there in 10 years. You know, the US dollar has lost 71% of its value since 2019.
Like, wow.
or something like that. Something like that. It's lost 99.6% of its value since the Fed was brought in. So 99.6, they've printed insane amounts since the start of COVID. Basically, it's a losing team. And I mean that as in saying, like, someone retrospectively playing for the team and following the money and doing all that stuff. Now there's a shortcut, and it's called Bitcoin. In the same way people leverage the internet to get ahead in media, people will leverage Bitcoin to get ahead in finance. And, you know, Michael Saylor's doing it right now. It's a free lunch for him. He's the only one at the party. And that just shows there's so much either timidness or people aren't in control of their own things. So a lot of people's decisions, you know, if I see Bitcoin pumping like crazy, I'm going to be like, yeah, well, that makes sense to me. But some people are hamstrung. Look at countries, for example. Some countries are bound to other political agreements, which means they can't start buying Bitcoin. Some companies use certain banks that won't keep banking them if they buy Bitcoin. So you kind of get these legacy obstructions in the way. But, you know, if you're a young person now, your goal setting should be orientated around things that can basically survive as long as your goal is. If you've got a 10-year goal, well, you want to hope that whatever you're looking for in 10 years still exists. And so I think young people putting, I've seen a lot of people that say they finally kind of grok Bitcoin. And most of these young cats, they'll go, my goal, everyone sets like a 10-year goal. And they just work backwards from that. And they're like, okay, every year my goal is to stack this much Bitcoin. And then at the end, in 10 years, when I'm 35 or 45 or whatever I am, you're going to retire. Like, you don't need to work till 70 with Bitcoin if you're smart and you focus on Bitcoin. And I don't mean try to figure it all out. I mean, just God tapped you on the shoulder and said, oi, just save in this currency and thank me in 10 years. And that's it. Don't have to worry about anything else. And if you don't believe it, just ask your friend that's been trying to tell you to buy it for the past 5 years, because I'm sure he is happy as fuck to tell you about that over and over again. And that's the thing. Everyone has a friend that's been like, oh, I told you, dude, you got to get into it. Anyway, yeah. But I've seen a lot of the people that grok it really quickly are the property guys. Great examples. Grant Cardone, Gary Cardone, big property dudes, real estate investors. And now they've just jumped ship onto Bitcoin, not jump ship, but so much so that their entire property portfolio, I think when there's like a delta of profit or value appreciation, they're actually migrating the capital gains or like the profit or the margin or whatever into Bitcoin as their mechanism of stockpiling Bitcoin. So everyone is doing what they know and then putting aside Bitcoin. So it's like, if I'm earning 200 grand a year at Goldman's or I'm earning 600 at HSBC, I'm putting my portion away in real money, which is Bitcoin, because if I'm saving in dollars, it's disappearing. I'm smarter than that. You're smarter than that. And so is your audience. They don't need to be that foolish to keep their money in dollars. Oh, but I didn't want the coffee to be worth, you know, 20% more if Bitcoin's volatile. Bro, I wanted you to be able to buy lunch in 10 years. That's why I'm telling you to save in Bitcoin. Otherwise, it's Zimbabwe town. You know, like we're on our way to it. It's wild.
Yeah. And that's the thing, guys. Like, I think the government has gotten away with this, because if somebody said to you, your currency is devaluing by 50% every 10 years, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
And you actually, they just started giving you 50% less. You'd never get away with it. But the reason they're getting away with it is because inflation is just making things more expensive, which is the same effect, but it's done through inflation. It's a tax. It's a way of stealing money without it being obvious. But I want to just touch on something for the young people and the people who are new to Bitcoin and crypto, because I'm a Bitcoin only person, right? And there is a difference between crypto and Bitcoin. And a lot of people have a price bias. And what I mean by that for the listener is they look at Bitcoin and they go, well, it's $100,000. That's done. It's too expensive, because they don't understand market capitalization, for example, of a company. And they go, I better get in on one of these other coins as if they're the same thing, that are like XRP is only $2.30. I'm going to put my money in that because that might go to $100,000. Right now, I'm talking to a guy here for the listeners who's built a billion-dollar tech company, right? So you know a little bit about the world of startups, right?
Yes.
And how risky they are. My personal view is, when I realized, because back in 2017 when I started buying, I had Ethereum and I had Solana, I had all these other things. But then it clicked, These are all tech startups. They've got human beings running them. They have the ability to issue more tokens. They have the human ability to change the rules. It's very much like a tech startup where there's the founder, they issue the tokens called shares. They sell those to investors, insiders. So, and the hit rate is pretty much similar to tech startups. So maybe you could speak to that quickly, because I know a lot of young people listening to this, they have a high risk tolerance because they're, you know, they've got time and they're less experienced, but they're going to, I think, waste a lot of money by going and chasing the next Bitcoin, which and let that there isn't going to ever be another Bitcoin. So maybe just talk to that for a minute.
Yeah. And that's firstly, for anyone that's thinking about that, it's a natural 100% thing to think. And I think it's a good point, Adam. You know, that price bias, guys, like if you've got a $3 coin and Bitcoin's 30,000, you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to go with the cheap one because that's got way more upside to grow. That's going to, oh, they're all going to 30,000. Oh, well, I may as well get the cheap one. Unfortunately, it's not the case. And a lot of the people, a lot of the crypto people, like as in not the people behind it, but just crypto as an essence in general, it's buy my thing to use my thing. It's not, hey, I'm here to help you get out of trouble. Debt is killing you. That's what Bitcoin's doing. It's not trying to do anything else. It's not trying to be anything more or less. It's just saying, I'm a debasing currency. If you've got a problem in your earth called inflation, you might like me. Now, with all the other tokens, they've all got a team and they've all got someone trying to sell it to you. And they're trying to force the narrative. Bitcoin's narrative has grown organically, and the origins of Bitcoin are, you know, not one of trying to sell it to everyone, trying to force feed it. It has a very organic growth where people sort of flock to the problem and they go, oh my God. And then that creates this big growth. Instead, you've got these tokens, they're trying to capitalize on your mindset, which is, oh, this is cheaper. Everyone will go for it. Like, you don't buy stocks that way. That you're like, why, who, oh, this is a 1 cent penny stock. Dude, penny stocks is what Jordan Belfort sells in The Wolf of Wall Street to suckers. Now, unless I'm talking to a bunch of suckers, I hope I'm not. If you want to be on the right side of it, everyone wants Bitcoin because it's the hard choice, not because it's the easy one. Everyone wants, you know, low cap, you know, whatever it is, Solana, ETH, this, that. I only like Bitcoin because it doesn't change. I know for a fact it can't change. So nothing on this planet can ever stop that clock from ticking. Now, if I'm planning my future financially for myself, look, I'm not planning what I'm wearing on the weekend. I don't give a shit. But if I'm not actually giving the most amount of shits about where my future financial capacity is coming from, then what am I caring about? Oh, I'm going to worry about what shoes to wear to that dance party. Like, bro, wake up. We are in a hostile environment right now. There is no nice stuff. Everyone's wondering why everyone feels tired. Everyone's feeling drained. Everyone's feeling burnt out. Because when you work for 40 hours a week and you can't buy the same amount of enjoyment from that, you're going to be pissed off. You're going to start thinking, why am I so tired? Why am I so unfulfilled? Because you're not filling your cup up. Working for someone else, I'm not criticizing hard work, by the way. I'm criticizing working hard and wasting. That's not cool.
Yeah, and getting way less for way more. You're getting a smaller hamburger that's got poorer quality ingredients in it. And on top of that, it's double the price that it was 5 years ago. And that applies to everything. That applies to
everything.
House. If you want a house now, it's not a 1,000-square-meter block, you know, with a brick and tile home. It's a 400-square-meter block with a shitty, you know, fibro home on it, and at five times the price. And so in Bitcoin, we have a saying, it's on a need-to-know basis. And Australians are some of the slowest to the party because we're the richest, right? Like, you got to really be committed to die of starvation here. So, you know, we're slow. People are slowly turning up the temperature in that sauna. Yes. And people are starting to go, hang on a second, am I getting cooked here? Like, am I getting fucked? And then as more and more people are waking up and more people, and that's why Bitcoin,
the consensus is we're all getting fucked.
And it's like continuing to grow. And if you believe that more and more people around the world are going, hang on a second, what Michael's saying here, aren't we supposed to have more time with our family? Aren't we supposed to actually be able to go out and work and then get paid and that money be worth the same amount in 5 years? Why does it have to be that work we did 5 years ago is now worth less, even though it's the same work?
Yeah.
And as people wake up to this, they find their way to Bitcoin. If you believe that's a global problem and more people are going to go, I want to store in this thing that's immutable, that's not controlled by anybody, where they can't issue more of it. You know, I get my share of the wheel. And if somebody wants my share, they have to, and there's more people buying, but well, it has to be, the price has to go up because there's nobody that can print more shares.
Yes.
If that all makes sense, that's the use case and the reason for why it grows and why people like Michael and I, when we get to a conference, we go, bro, we both got it. We both clocked.
Yeah.
And I look at life differently now because we know, oh, shit, what a pressure valve being released that we found this technology to store our effort safely.
Yes. And that's the thing, guys. Like, let's just think out loud, right? Okay. How many hours a week did they work in 1960? 40. How many hours in 1970? 40. 40, 40, 40, 40, 40. How has technology changed since then? It's gone up pretty materially, I'd say. We're to the point where we're still working 40 hours a week. There's robots, there's flying cars, there's LLMs that know the entirety of human history in one prompt, yet I still need you there for 40 hours a week. Something's wrong. That doesn't make sense. The hours I'm working, the money I'm making, and the technology that's empowering me, they all need to speak the same language. But you can't have technology growing 1.8x a year for 50 years, but my wages don't do the same and my work capacity doesn't do the same. Basically, what's happened, technology has grown an insane amount and it's just compressed the amount of output per head in a company. So instead of actually saying, hey, guys, we actually don't need to be here 5 days a week, we can actually be here 2 days. Everyone's like, oh, so if you're here 5 days a week, now I can get twice as much out of you. It's just a dumb game. Like, most of that sort of shit is like a loser's game. It's a good game. Like, business is a good game, but it's a mug's game. Like, you're not going to get fulfillment. You're not going to get happiness. True wealth is with family, friends, and good memories. And I say that like I'm a boomer or whatever. Yeah, I'm too old. I'm over the hill or whatever. But I'm not that far from reality. Like, I mean, I was an entrepreneur 2 years ago. Started my company 10 years ago, like in my 20s. So it's sort of like, yeah, it's just the trade. Bitcoin is the trade. Like, I wish I could hypnotize almost everyone to think about it, only because, not because I want them to buy Bitcoin to pump my bags, but because I know what it's like to be young, to be confused, and to feel the pressure. And, you know, if you think about, just speaking about males alone, the number one cause of death in the United Kingdom right now for men under 45 is suicide. Mm. Now, I bet 1,000% that there's financial and social pressures that come with that. What am I going to do? How am I going to make my money? I can never beat this. I understand that and I hear that and I think that's so sad. And that's like most of the young men I think about and young girls, get into Bitcoin, secure your financial future so you can be the smartest version of you. We don't want to see you working a job you don't want. We don't want to see you doing things you shouldn't be doing. I want to see you finding your purpose as fast as possible, because that's what we're all in debt to each other. There's 8 billion of us here on this planet. We're all stuck here. We're all in debt to one another. And the debt is that we owe each other our purpose, meaning you owe it to me and I owe it to you to strive to do whatever I can do best. And you do the same and we all do the same. That's how we level up. And so, like, you know, when I think about that, it's just like everything else that's not Bitcoin financial. I don't care how smart your friend is, he's wrong. Like, whatever friend you've got that says Bitcoin's not good, they're wrong. They're wrong. Yeah. Send them my phone number, send them to my house. They're wrong. Like, that's it. It's the biggest problem. Bitcoin is too good to be false, I think is the term people give it, which is like, it's so good that it, and like, by the way, all we are talking about is not getting our money debased every year. Like, that's how low the bar is for a quality product in this world, where it's like, oh, you don't steal from me. Oh, man, that's game-changing. Holy moly. Oh, my God. And that is the level that humanity has gotten to, where it's like, oh, you won't steal from me without me knowing. Great. Anyway.
I can't remember. I think it was you told me to read the Tao of Bitcoin, which I'm about two-thirds of the way through.
Yeah, awesome book. Scott Dettles is speaking this weekend at, I'll just get it one sec. Keep going.
The author in the book actually dropped your name while I was reading it. listening to it. I was like, hey, Daddy's in the book, which is really cool.
He ran out of guests. He had to scrape the barrel.
But I think it was in that book where he said, I want you to think about what the world would be like if you could go out and work and then get paid, and then that money was worth the same in 20 years or 100 years as it's worth today. Just stop and think about how that would impact society. But because of inflation and because of the cost of everything going up so much, yeah, he said in the book, we've turned our houses into hotels, we've turned our cars into taxis, and we've turned our bodies into porn.
Yep.
Right? All to try to keep up with inflation.
Yes.
If we didn't have inflation and you could actually do an honest day's work, get an honest day's pay, and it's going to be preserved in time and through time,
yep,
the world would be a very different place. Entire industries wouldn't exist. Like, you wouldn't need a financial advisor. You wouldn't need to be in the stock market.
Yep.
And you could be if you wanted to grow, but you didn't need to be just to keep up with zero. Because now, if you're not keeping up with inflation, you're actually slowly working your way to the street, literally. Yep. Like, if you're not keeping up with inflation, you are actually getting poorer and you're heading up. So to keep up with inflation, you have to take on risk. You can't leave your money in a term deposit. And so this taking on of risk means the sacrifice of time with your children, means sitting up and reading a financial book, like I'm reading The Big Print by Lawrence Lepard at the moment.
Nice. You got a copy, man.
Yeah, well, I'm interviewing him next week. It means reading this kind of stuff when you should be with your kids and you can't take a walk. Like, it's really insidious and really evil. And it all started from when the banksters said, we're going to print money. Adam, you guys have to do work to get it, but we don't need any proof of work. We're just going to print it. And then they said, inflation's normal. Just a little bit of inflation's normal. Once we buy that lie, we're done. We are slaves forever to the system of working. And Bitcoin, Bitcoin gives you the escape. And so when you see it, you can't unsee it. And it's like the Matrix, right? The blue pill, the red pill. Once you go down that rabbit hole, and this is why I know people like you and like me, some people are listening to this, watching this, these guys have lost their mind. They've become crazy people. But I just encourage you, if that's how you feel, that's how I used to feel. And I would look at people. I spoke to your brother, Peter, and he was, saying how one of the guys who introduced me to Peter said, I sold 7 properties in Sydney and Manly and around, who works for Peter, and says, I put it all in the Bitcoin. And the first time I heard that, I was like, he just sold the Australian dream and put it into this crazy internet money. But this property I'm in right now was in the paper 2 weeks ago because I did the same thing. I said, I will take Bitcoin for this primo beachfront pad happily. Yeah. And the press picked it up and went, this guy's lost his mind. I'm like, actually, no. You guys have lost your mind wanting to own this instead of it, because I understand deeply, you know. I mean, what do you say the average Aussie mindset who is convinced that Coles and Woolies is the root of all evil in Australia and that real estate is the only way to get ahead?
I'd say I understand the logic. Now, if real estate's the only way to get ahead, I'm sorry. I feel bad for you. Firstly, you're not going to make as much as if you're in Bitcoin. Secondly, you're going to be dealing with landlords, tenants, broken air conditioning, fix the paint, fix the doorknob. But how busy is that? We don't have time to do that shit. Investing in real estate, it's not passive. It's the most active shit you can do. I'd rather invest in the S&P and make less. And so, like, the idea, back to your point as well, real estate's getting worse because of inflation. Like, you see now, these buildings, their walls are falling apart because in the render that they use, they had to cut down on the amount of lime they were mixing in, which, because limestone or whatever, the powder got really expensive, so they just halved the amount. Now the fucking render's falling off the wall. Imagine buying a home and the walls are falling out. Look at the Sydney.
Terrible.
Dude, the Sydney storm like 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, torrential rain. Dude, people have got, man, it looked like fucking Zimbabwe. People have got water coming out of their electrical sockets and stuff. Because what happens is everyone's just scamming each other. Yeah. So what would I say to the people? I'd say, I get it. Property's the thing, but you need to understand that property now, the average, if you want to look at property, look at the average income and how that has changed as the cost of property. And so I would focus on Bitcoin because it is scarce
and it's got a more global appeal. So imagine you could buy your home and like wherever you are, but the market for your home is is 8 billion people anywhere in the world that might want to move into your home. You're going to have a much bigger audience and potential capital, like, you know, making money in that regard. And it's much easier. Life's hard now. You don't have time. No one investing in property, unless it's their sole job, has time to deal with 28 relationships, builders, fixer-uppers, internet guy coming, the Foxtel guy coming, the landlord shat in the bed, the this, that, whatever it is, all these things, too much. You need to focus on you and being healthy and staying alive and let your money work for you. Property is not your money working for you. Property is you working for your money. Bitcoin is when you buy it and you turn around and 5 years later it's worth more and you keep doing that and you're like, oh my God, this is so much simpler. You've got so much mental bandwidth in your brain. Don't waste it on trying to exist, you know, like, you know, it's like you're wasting all your time trying to find your next piece of oxygen. It's like, no, just commit to Bitcoin. That's your oxygen because everyone else is using it and no one knows how to break it. Cool. Now you don't have to think about it. I'm on a Bitcoin standard, which is where my unit of account or what I measure my wealth in is in Bitcoins. And so it's like that will give you, I'm after peace of mind. Like every day when you wake up, like you've got to think about it, right? In this world, we wake up bombarded with noise and negative news. Cool. That sucks. Then you leave the house all dressed up, trying to look the part. You got suit on. You go into work. Who do you talk to? You talk about spreadsheets with your boss that doesn't give a fuck about you, doesn't know when your birthday is and doesn't really care about you. And you're showing up for them looking like Superman, ready to work. And then you do a whole day's work and you come home and the people that actually matter to you, wife, kids, family, dog, anything, you're like a half-baked version of yourself. It's like life has like KO punched you and you've gone on like 10 rounds with life all day. But that's not it. We're meant to show up for our family optimal and show up for the other people, like whatever, like professional courtesy and etiquette and stuff. Like you really do learn that money will buy you a home, buy you a house, not a home. It'll buy you a clock, not time. It'll buy you a doctor, not health. And it's like, once you start realizing, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a shit trade. And it's like, I feel bad because so many people get sold this bullshit. And I'm the same. Like I got sold it and I just tripped over Bitcoin. But since then, I promise you, like if you don't listen to anything I've said, the only thing I would say is if you lose on betting on Bitcoin, I'll give you your money back. Yeah. That's it. Like, because I know you won't. And I'm not buying. But yeah, it's just buy it and hold it. Build your foundations on something rock solid. You know, if you go to build a building in Tokyo, they're not going to say just start building. You're going to get a geologist in there to investigate what the ground and the seismic activity is because it doesn't matter how good your house is. If it's built on something that's shaking, your house will fall over. Money is the exact same thing. So if your supply is shaking with people printing it, no matter how beautiful your architecture is, no matter how clever your structure is, you're second best because the dependency is going to fuck you. And in software, in life, whatever it is, dependencies are what can be the undoing. And I think right now you want to build your future. If you're young, you want to build your future with certainty. Let's say I was meeting someone and I was like, hey, what are you doing? They're like, oh, I'm saving all my money in Aussie dollars. And then I meet someone else that goes, oh, no, I focus on 10 years from now, so I'm saving in Bitcoin. I'm hanging with that dude. He's got a brain. Like, he's thinking. And it is the weird thing with Bitcoin, you'll be rewarded a lot and you won't work hard, but your cerebral work will be going overdrive. So it's like it's this counterintuitive thing. We think, put the shovel in the ground, get paid. No. Think about putting the shovel in the ground and think about why you should put the shovel in the ground. Then you get paid. Like Bitcoin rewards that cerebral effort more than the physical effort.
Yeah, you learn so much about yourself once you become a Bitcoiner and you just go through these days where, you know, you see 20%, 30% drawdowns and you learn, and if you just sit with it for a minute rather than hitting the sell button, you learn about your relationship with money. You learn your emotional triggers around it and all that sort of stuff. Mm. And I just for everybody watching this, I can honestly say, as being a 30-year veteran of entrepreneurship, I've learned more being a Bitcoin holder since 2017, 2018 to today than I have in business, just about myself, about how I think about life. For me, you know, it's Bitcoin only because I just it's such a pure, beautiful invention. And the people around it are just my tribe. So I just really enjoy hanging out with people like you, Michael. I appreciate your time coming on to have a riff with me for an hour. But if you're listening, guys, you've heard it here, you know, from Michael. He's such an interesting Australian. You know, he's done it in business and really bright guy. He's got a background, I think, in thermodynamics or something as well, right? Like,
I'm down for anything. Anything you want to talk about, I'm down for.
Guys, thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed the pod, make sure that you drop a comment. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you'd like more guests like Michael on, or if you'd like Michael to come back again at some point in the future. But get yourself along to a Bitcoin conference. What are the big ones in Australia, mate? There's Bitcoin Alive, isn't there?
Bitcoin Alive's the biggest. And then for the more community-orientated ones, they've got the Bitcoin Bush Bash, and they hold three of those a year. And that's where, if anyone's listening or ever contemplating, Bitcoin Alive is a big conference in March. That's this Saturday. They've got another one called Cheat Code that's in November. And between then, there's three of these events called the Bitcoin Bush Bash. And either way, wherever you go, don't feel uncomfortable. Don't feel you're going to be the stupidest person in the room. And that's all good because we were all idiots. So I'm just telling you, if you ever feel apprehensive about maybe going to a meeting or asking a question, never feel that way because we've all been there. And I'm not speaking to you specifically, Adam. I'm speaking to the audience because it's such a powerful thing. Guys, one of the biggest, most important things is called psychological safety. And what that means is you don't feel uncomfortable asking a stupid question. You know, some people be like, oh, I really want to learn more, but man, I don't want to sound like an idiot and ask the question. No. Sound like the idiot? Trust me, future you will thank you so much more. And anyone that you're asking the question to that you think might think you're an idiot, they know you're not an idiot because the idiot doesn't ask the question. The smart person who wants to grow and progress and improve, they will ask the question. So just give me a bit of confidence. Never feel like the idiot. And if you do feel like the idiot, I guarantee you I've been dumber than you and asked stupider questions than you. That's a promise.
That is the Bitcoin community all over. They're just such open, good people. And everyone I've come into touch with, even and especially the ones that have been around it for the longest and are probably the richest, have the least ego. And just this past week, I've been put in touch with some OG Bitcoiners like yourself and others that have been around for a long time. They've got big bags. For those wondering what we mean, big bags, big holdings of Bitcoin, zero ego. And that's the beautiful thing about Bitcoin. We should be spreading the word with humility because it really does solve the cancer in everyone's life, which is the theft of our time and energy through the fiat money system. And that's a message that needs to be spread with compassion. So, Michael, thank you so much for your time, mate. We appreciate you. I look forward to hanging out with you again soon at some Bitcoin event somewhere, no doubt.
Me too, mate.
Have a great day. Bye for now.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.